This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom.
Oh my god!
Awesome. We refer to it constantly.
Thank you.
So keep it up. We use it literally on set.
To keep track of the right stuff.
Send her a fruit basket.
You should start charging us.
Hi and welcome to a very special edition of the Women of Letters, because we have Gadabout Jules on today talking all about her Comic-Con adventures. So over to you, Jules.
Over to me. Yes, I've just gadded about back from LA, literally off the plane a couple of hours ago. So I may be a little bit scattered at the moment, but as usual with cons, I think it's always a good idea to I like to talk about them sooner rather than later, because to capture some of that, you know, excitement of what it was like. And even though Comic Con was last weekend, it's I'm still riding a high from it. So I'm more than happy to talk about it today and relive all the wonderfulness that was Comic Con. So how dark is the darkness?
The darkness, I mean, as she evolves, she's gonna be about as dark as it gets, I think. You know, it's a character who, you know, the fun thing about it is you're kind of dealing with something that is in lore. It's kind of this pre-existent, it was before the light, but it's not super defined, so you can kind of make her whatever you want. But, you know, when we've done big bads on Supernatural, generally they tend to be big bad by committee. You know, the angels and the demons, the Leviathans, which were, you know, under Dick Roman, but there were a lot of different, you know, voices in that world.
They're a franchise.
Exactly, they're more of a franchise. Whereas with the darkness, this is a character that comes in, is very strong, and knows exactly what it's going for, and will go for it without any compunction. And, you know, that doesn't mean the character's going to come in and be monolithically evil or anything like that. It's a character, like with all of our good characters, we want to develop, we want to show, you know, a humorous side and a vindictive side and everything else. But it is a character that at the end of the day, you know, it's called the darkness for a reason. That's what it wants. And, you know, it will kind of do anything to get us back to that point.
So, because I'm an idiot, I have this idea often of like, well, I'm going to a con. That sounds like fun, but let's make it even more fun and I'll organize something else. And as people would know, I've been involved with organizing the VFX non-con at Vancouver the last couple of years, which is, I suppose, partly because I always want there to be more opportunities for people just to hang out. And cons, whatever convention you're going to, are often really busy going between panels and autographs and photos and all that. And, you know, big reason for me going is to be able to meet people that I've, you know, only talked to on the internet, or people I've never talked to on the internet, and get to hang out as a fandom. And myself and a friend called Heidi Tandy, who I met through Supernatural fandom way back in about, we can't pin down the date, but it was about 2007. We were both on LiveJournal, and I met her then, and we've sort of, you know, been friends over the years, although we'd never met face to face. But Heidi goes to Comic-Con every year, except the 1 year previously that I'd been to Comic-Con, which is 2010, was the 1 year she hasn't been. But she's been going to Comic-Con for many years, and she's very involved in Harry Potter fandom, and has done a number of panels and events with Harry Potter fandom, and more recently with the Organization for Transformative Works. So, little aside, I was on a panel that she organised called Fandom is My Fandom, which was on the Thursday afternoon. But we decided it'd be great because no one had ever organised a Supernatural fandom get together. So for people who don't know Comic-Con, you have the main convention, which is ginormous, and there's, you know, 130,000 people going in the convention centre. But basically the whole of San Diego becomes part of the convention, and there are a lot of what people call off-site events. So there'll be, for example, the Sci-Fi Network or Sci-Fi Channel takes over the Hard Rock Cafe, decks it all out in tribute to one of the new shows it's got coming. There's parties and other events on at a whole lot of venues around town. People will know, of course, there's Nerd HQ, which is Zach Levi's venture, which takes place off-site. And this year there was also at another place, at the Petco Stadium, was Nerdist, Geek and Sundry, and Smart Girls had events there. So you could actually, and one of our friends, you know, did for most of the time, go to Comic-Con without having a ticket to the actual convention. There is so much on. One thing I went to that was pretty amazing was a podcast on Saturday night. It was a live recording at the Balboa Theatre in San Diego by Chris Hardwick from The Nerdist with, get this lineup, Tom Hiddleston, Guillermo del Toro and Maisie Williams from Game of Thrones. So
I'm still waiting for him to post that on his site, on The Nerdist.
It will be up, I'm sure.
Yeah, he hasn't put it up there yet, and I keep double checking because I listen to the Chris's Nerdist podcast all the time, and I'm like, where is that one? I want to listen to.
Well,
it.
Well, he did too. He did that one was on at 10:30, and then at 7:30 that night he'd done a Doctor Who one as well because Peter Capaldi and Jenna Coldman and Stephen Moffat and Michelle Gomez were in town. So there are all those sort of things that you can go to off site. The first event I went to, which was even before my event, was called Game of Bloggers. And that was a get-together of a whole lot of different sort of bloggers just as a sort of a social slash networking event. And that was really fun just to meet people who, you know, whose engagement in fandom and geekdom is you know, can be anything. And, you know, it's just a great opportunity to meet a whole lot of people. Anyway, so we decided to have a cocktail party. It was called Carry On Wayward Cocktails. We didn't know if anyone would come, but 300 people came and it sold out. And it was we had swag bags with monogrammed hip flasks and little bags. You got a little bag with some salt in it and a book of matches from a random motel in the US. And some people got a poncho a la poncho guy from the 200th episode. Wattpad were one of our sponsors and our major sponsor. They made a set of cards like a mini Cards Against Humanity expansion called Cards Against Fan Fiction, which are absolutely wonderful, and I have got a couple of those left that I'll give away on the Super Wiki Twitter. And it was at the Analog Bar in San Diego. I think everyone had a wonderful time.
It's a bit
hard for me to tell because I was in the thick of trying to organise things. We had the wonderful Hindi sisters from the Hollywood show there, and we played the parody video, and they were hanging out and selling T-shirts and being as awesome and gorgeous as we know they are. We had a number of other people associated with Supernatural drop in. We had Curtis Armstrong. Metatron himself visited us, and we also had some of the writers. We had Bob Behrens and Jenny Klein, Adam Glass, who of course has now moved on to another show, Criminal Minds Beyond Borders. We had Robbie Thompson and ex-Supernatural writer Ben Edlund.
Yes.
So
and just seeing the photos of them all together was really great, and with all of you guys, you know, loads and loads of fan photos as well that I found of people with Ben or with Adam or with Robbie, and everybody was just really excited to meet the writers.
Yes, and so that was, again, that's something I love, just to, there's very few opportunities for that to happen in that sort of casual, you know, get together and have a drink sort of atmosphere. Mm. So we may do it again next year. It was.
I might have to come next year, Jules.
Yes, we'll see. I mean, I hope the people went really enjoyed it. I do admit there was some organisational stuff that we could have done better. It is really hard to organise a cocktail party for 300 people from the other side of the world. But knowing the venue and the venuers and the staff there were fantastic, we could probably iron out any of those glitches. But it was just nice to have a Supernatural specific event, and probably a good way to kick off the con for a lot of people, because that was on the Thursday night. So Comic-Con starts on the Wednesday night, which is known as preview night, and there aren't as many tickets sold for that night. And on that night, you can either watch previews of a whole lot of shows that are coming up, so watch the pilot episode for a number of shows, and it's also the first night that the exhibition floor is open, and a lot of the Comic-Con exclusives are on sale that night. So that's when all the queuing for things starts.
And you managed to score yourself a Supernatural bag and a Castiel French Mistake Funko.
I have to say, I ended up with this. I didn't get a Supernatural bag when I came in. I had got a press pass this year, so based on the Super Wiki and the my TV Chinwag podcast that I do with Ryan, I'd managed to get a press pass, and I hadn't checked in because I was busy trying to get stuff ready for the cocktail party. I think check-in starts at 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and I didn't get there till about 6, and it was quite busy. And so you don't get a choice of the Comic-Con bags when you come in. You get handed one. If you're lucky and if it's not very busy, you can sort of, you know, maybe get the one you want, or you swap afterwards. Yeah, and I managed to swap afterwards. So that was how I got the Supernatural bag, but it's certainly not a it's not a done deal.
No. I saw a few people tweeting about how they were like, they got a different bag and they were like tracking people down that they thought might want to swap.
Yes, there's a lot of that goes on for all the bags. So having a press pass, just so people know, all that does is give you, it's basically like a free ticket to the convention. It doesn't give you any privileges. So it puts you on a mailing list for press events, but you then have to go through the individual PR people or company or agents to request to be allowed to attend a press event. So there's a hats off. It gave me an insight into the incredible work that all the people who cover Comic-Con for every blog or media site or whatever do, because it starts about a month beforehand of trying to juggle your schedule of, you know, what press events you're going to go to, and you don't know, you've got to apply and then get accepted. And so there's a lot of work goes into that. So that was Wednesday night. One thing I was a bit annoyed with, so yes, we did line up. And I say we because actually a friend of mine got me my Meta Misha Funko. I outsourced my queuing for that one. But they were available the next day to buy at Hot Topic and Barnes & Noble.
Oh, which, not very San Diego Comic-Con exclusive.
Well, not very, yes, exclusive has a different meaning. The ones you buy at, say, Hot Topic have a sticker on the front saying summer convention exclusive, and the ones you got at Comic-Con had SDCC exclusive, but they're the same thing. Now, not all exclusives were released like that. So there were a lot of other figures and things from other companies, and even from Funko weren't released, but the Meta Misha, the French Mistake Misha, was released that way. So I was a little bit miffed about that, even though I didn't have to queue for it. But, you know, if you get something exclusive, you do sort of want it to be exclusive, if you've gone to all the trouble of queuing up for 3 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
And the one thing that I wish wasn't exclusive that I didn't get, which is the Brian Fuller, who's the showrunner for Hannibal, his Pop Funko was only available when he was signing, and I didn't get one of those because I wasn't there, and I want one. So if anyone out there has a Brian Fuller Funko, I really, really want it. So that's Wednesday night. Thursday, I lost at least half of Thursday to getting ready for the cocktail party, but that was cool, and I had my panel last thing in the afternoon, and then the cocktail party, and then many, many panels for the next couple of days, and off-site events, as I said, podcasts and that podcast. What else do I go to off-site? There must have been other things. There's so much going on. Like near our apartment, which was quite close to the convention center, was a Assassin's Creed obstacle course. So wake up every morning to sounds. It didn't start till 9 o'clock or something, but it was like one of those what is it, like the American Ninja Show, where there's those obstacle course where you swing across things and jump over things. Yeah. So there was that. There was a Fear of the Walking Dead sort of abandoned city thing to walk through. And, yeah, everywhere you go, I mean, that's the thing, is that everywhere you go, it's just wall-to-wall geekdom the whole time. It's a bit like being in some sort of bizarre AU mashup, you know.
Yeah,
And now I'm just trying to think if there are any other supernatural related things before Sunday. Oh, the one thing we did see was on Saturday night at about, it was about 7 o'clock. So in addition to, most people will know there's the big rooms where they have the TV and movie stuff, but there's probably another dozen rooms in the convention centre where there are panels. Well, there's more than a dozen all weekend as well. And they're smaller rooms. They range down from sort of rooms that will fit 1,000 people down to rooms that only have 100. And there's that sort of the sort of fan run panel that I was on, to smaller fandoms and things like that. And on Saturday night, I went to one for something I know you saw in Sydney, the Thrilling Adventure Hour.
Oh yes! Oh, how exciting!
Which apparently is now finished. They're not doing
it. Yes, they're not doing it anymore. That world tour that they did, which was Australia and New Zealand, was the end of it. I think they filmed their recorded their last one at Largo before they came over here, and that was it. The Bens just said they have a full-time job. They write on a Netflix exclusive cartoon, I think it is. What is it? I know what it is. I can't think. And they said their full-time job just doesn't allow them time to do the Thrilling Adventure anymore.
Right, that.
They do 70. They said it was like 70 pages a month. Yeah. That they'd have to write for the Thrilling Adventure Hour, and they just don't have the time to do it anymore.
And if people haven't checked out the Thrilling Adventure Hour, I highly recommend it. And
hilarious.
The supernatural connection, of course, is that both Rob Benedict and Richard Speight sort of joined the cast on a semi-regular basis in the last 18 months or so. Would that be...
Yeah, in the last 8 months about. Yeah, they've started doing. Rich was involved. I think Tim Ombinson's done one
as
well.
He's done it. I mean, lots of very well-known actors.
Yeah, Nathan Fillion is...
he's been a bit of a regular.
Yeah, he's a bit of a regular. And Padgett Brewster from... is that how you say her name? I can't remember now. Yeah, from Criminal Minds is a regular cast member, which I totally forgot. And when I saw it, because I got to see it live in Sydney, when I saw it and she came out, I was like, oh God, I totally forgot, because like everybody else, you didn't know them, you just knew them from the Thrilling Adventure. I didn't really know who they were, but when she came out, I was like, oh my gosh. Oh, that would have been fun. Now, were Rob and Rich there or anything?
Yes, so they were there. They were at... now they'd done a brief sort of 10-minute thing on the Kings of Con at Geek and Sundry on the Saturday afternoon, which a couple of friends of mine had been to, and then they were at the Thrilling Adventure Hour panel. So we were thrilled to go along and see them, and of course it was absolutely hilarious. And we were wondering. We were wondering, oh, I wonder if they might turn up at the Supernatural panel on Sunday, little knowing what was about, what was about to happen. So it was lovely to see them then, and we were just sort of speculating on, what else might happen. Oh, that was the one other panel, I think. So the other things that Supernatural Peeps did, Jenny Klein did a Nerdist Writers panel, which Ben Blacker and Ben Acker from Thrilling Adventure Hour also involved in.
That's Ben Blacker's little project.
Yeah, was on...
Another thing, if you don't listen to the Nerdist Writers panel, that's another podcast I highly recommend. It's absolutely wonderful. And they have had Supernatural writers on in the past, so you can go back and look up. They did one with Adam Glass, and they did a big one which Ben Edlund was on, which was really great. And of course, Ben Acker and Ben Blacker did write for Supernatural in season 7.
Robin Thompson was present in his role as a Marvel Comics writer, author of Silk. So he was signing, I think, 2 or 3 days. He was at the Marvel area on the floor signing his comics, which I saw him on Thursday. And so that was exciting. They had his behind him where the signing was. They had Robert Thompson.
I saw him tweet
very
that out.
Grown up. Robert Thompson still. But that was great. And again, that's what the floor's like, is that there are, a lot of people that, you're going to want to see writers, particularly writers and comics writers, but also, anyone who's there from a TV show or movie is likely to turn up on the floor at some point. It is that sort of place. You never know who you're going to run into, even accidentally. There are autograph sessions all through the weekend. There are some of the big ones, like the Supernatural one, which is at the WB booth on the Sunday morning. The WB was giving away T-shirts and sweatshirts with Supernatural on it. I don't think there were many of them. We missed them on the Wednesday night. One of my friends got one, but I didn't hear many people talking about having got one, so I'm not sure.
That's interesting.
And they don't announce these things. These things are just happening random all the time. So you either need to be hooked into your network of people you know at Comic-Con, or just and keeping your ears open, because that sort of stuff happens all the time. Some of the giveaways are announced and you know that, and there are various, as I said, exclusives to line up for, but other things just happen. They have TV guides to give away as well WB booth.
I just wanted to say, and just on the writers too, I saw that Ben Edlund was on the Powers panel.
Yes, he's writing for Powers.
Yeah, which is the PlayStation original drama. So he's left Gotham and he's writing for Powers, season of Powers.
He's joined second season of Powers, which I don't know if you've watched. It's based on a comics graphic novel series. I was not... which I was excited about, because I loved the first issue of the series, which is called Who Killed Retro Girl. I really liked it, and the idea behind it's really good too. It's sort of about unit in the police force who are tasked with the control of out of control superheroes, if you like.
Yeah, right.
So I really like the concept of it, and as I said, I like the comics, but it didn't, I think it was a combination of finding its feet and the production values. I watched about the first 3 or 4 episodes of the first season and then didn't continue with it, but now knowing Edlund's on board, of course, we'll be all over that.
Yeah, giving it another look, which is what I did with Gotham, which I didn't love, but when Ben joined, I was like, I might have to have another look at Gotham, at least some specific episodes.
Yeah, so and Ben was there. He was on the panel for Powers. He was also on the Nerdist Writers panel, and he, of course, was signed for the Tick, as he does every year. And there were many people in Tick cosplay, as there always are.
I know, and he's signing. I saw a photo that Jenny posted where he's signing for these two guys, and I'm like, God, those guys' outfits lead absolutely nothing to the imagination whatsoever. And there they are right in front of Ben's face as he's signing. I was like, don't look up, Ben, don't look up.
I think they were, and there was Robin Rich on the Thrilling Adventure Hour. I don't think anyone else, Orlando Jones was there, of course, and I briefly got to meet him and get a photo. That was like 30 seconds, but, oh, my God, what a man full of charisma and animal magnetism he is. I'm trying to think if there are any other Supernatural alumni who had... I think that was mainly it. So then the next, I suppose, the big thing was the strategies for getting into Hall H for Supernatural on Sunday. Yes. Is there a line you have where you've got to look out for, are we actually putting the boys to be responsible for, something so heinous that we're going to put the audience offside?
That were.
You're doing something, they've started something so heinous and terrible for the world. that the audience might be like, hey, Sam and Dean, that was a bad thing to do?
I think it's a really good question. And I think more than, I mean, it just sounds goofy, but more than what we think, I think what's more, most important, what's on the screen, what the boys think.
Right.
So to completely ignore it, I think, would be to ignore a very big elephant in the room, which is when they're alone and they're drinking a beer, as they do every episode, that they have to have that moment, and they will, where they're like, you know what? Have we been looking after each other a little bit in spite of the greater good? You know, I mean, one could argue, I mean, for the last couple seasons, even though it feels like a victory, maybe a day later you start to really sort out what happened there in the finale. You're like, but then actually some bad happened, and of course that causes great drama for the next season, which is the whole point. But most importantly, the boys are asking themselves that exact question, and they're dealing with that head on in terms of...
Which was that monologue, the dialogue they had in the finale really was about that.
Right, and that sentiment carries on in the face of what's been released, yeah.
So general advice on queuing at Comic-Con. It's really hard to know, and it'll depend on how popular something is, what size room it's in, and what else is on the schedule with it. So I'm not sure, was it last year was the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who?
Yes.
Okay.
And that panel was before Supernatural.
Yeah, so what happens is, for example, I wanted to see the panel for Sense8, which was in Ballroom 6A, which is a smaller room, which I think fits a couple of thousand. And I went about 2 hours beforehand to line up for it, and the queue was already, you know, halfway to Los Angeles.
Right. Gosh. Because you're just never going to know what show is going to really pop.
Well, and
know,
I'm
really
thinking,
pop.
Wow, you know, I'm really thrilled. I'm glad Sense8's so popular. But, of course, it wasn't.
Oh, it was.
Sense8 was so popular. After Sense8 was The Ash and the Evil Dead, and everyone's going out for Bruce Campbell.
Of course. So how does that work then? If you want to go to Sense8, can you go to the front or?
No. So you queue to get into a room. It doesn't matter what panel you're going to. You're just queuing to get into a room. What they do is they don't clear the rooms between panels.
Right.
If you want to go and see a panel at 3 o'clock, you might go, well, I'm going to get into that room at 11 o'clock and stay there until then. And that's what people do. And some, you know, in some rooms, Ballroom 20, for example, which has a lot of the TV panels on, it's well worth it. Once you've got into Ballroom 20, stay there all day because there's really good stuff. I think I saw 4 panels in a row in there on two days in a row, because you might be wanting to see one or two of them. You can't go out and do something else and
come back.
Yeah, and you can't think that you can go from one panel to another and just walk in, because queuing's a big thing. Now, Hall H, of course, the big things at Hall H this year were Friday was the Star Wars Day, so that was...
They would have been queuing for that since Wednesday.
Just about. And then Saturday had a number of things, including DC movies and legendary movies. So, big things then. And then, of course, Sunday was Supernatural, although the schedule around Supernatural was a lot lighter this year. So there was Vampire Diaries beforehand. And there are a couple of things afterwards. I think 2 panels afterwards was the Heroes reboot.
Yeah.
Panel, but very much smaller in terms of fandoms and such. But so what they have is a thing called the next day line. Now, this is where it gets complicated. So there's the queue to get in to Hall H, say, on Saturday.
Yeah.
That keeps going all day. The queue for Sunday starts in a different area.
Right.
The so-called NDL, the next day line.
Yeah.
What happens is you can queue there, and then at a certain time the night before, say 10 o'clock at night, they'll go along and give out wristbands. And what it means is if you get a wristband, you are – I don't think they'll say guaranteed because you can't guarantee anything, but you will get in to the first panel the next day.
Right.
But what you have to do is you still have to stay in your queue all night.
Yeah.
So, but what you can do is if there are 4 or 5 of you, you can have a roster system going. So four of you can go off and go to another panel or go home and have a nap or something, and I'll be there and we'll, you know, jig tag a relay system, and then you're in your place in line. Because one of the reasons people queue is because they want to be at the front of the hall. Hall H holds 8,500 people. So obviously, if you actually want to see the actual faces of the people on stage, you need to be very close. They have great screens everywhere. You can hear and see wherever you're sitting. You just won't actually see the people on stage because,
you're too far away.
They're ants. Lots like Ant-Man. They're very, very far away. So the people who want to be up the front really want to queue. What happens is if you don't stay in the queue all night, you can come back the next morning with your wristband on, but you will get put to the back of everyone with a wristband on.
So you
might have been 20 people in when you got your wristband, but if you come back at 7 o'clock the next morning, you'll be at the back of the first 8,000 people.
Right.
So you're still going to get in, but, you know, not we're not up the front.
Yeah.
So I made a judgment call, which was a risk, was that I wasn't going to queue. I had the Tom Hiddleston podcast on the Saturday night at 10:30, and I think they were giving out wristbands at 11, so I wasn't going to miss that. And I made a guess that because the schedule wasn't big on Sunday in Hall H, that I was probably going to be okay. So basically, I got down there at 6 a.m. on Sunday.
Yeah.
And the queue, they'd already moved people from the next day line area into the proper Hall H line.
Yeah.
And I got a wristband. I got a B wristband.
Oh, so okay.
It meant that a lot of people didn't do the next day line queuing.
Right.
As it was, so I queued from 6 a.m. I think the Vampire Diaries panel started at 9:30, so I got in, you know, they started moving people in, obviously, not long after 9, and I got in before then, and I was at it's probably about a quarter of the way back.
Okay.
So in the hall. So look, these are the sort of decisions you have to make all week at Comic-Con is, you know, yes. And I know, for example, the other big panel I really wanted to see was the Hannibal panel. Hannibal. That was at 5 p.m. on Friday. One day, I'm a bit confused now. It was at 5 p.m. Some people queued from the night before. That was in Ballroom 20. The panel was at 5 p.m. I lined up at 2:30 and got in for the second two or three panels beforehand. So, and you probably could have got in, you know, queuing less than an hour to get into. So you never know.
Yeah.
And you have to make those decisions. I'm always going to choose. I'd rather see five things that I sort of really like and sometimes maybe miss that one thing, depending on what it is, because I'd rather see five things than one thing. You know,
yeah, just, exactly. You've got to spend your whole time in the queue.
Yeah, but then again, you know, you look at some of the coverage and you're like, oh, my God, I would have killed to have been in there for the Star Wars stuff.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I watched that panel and I cried.
I know. And it's like... To think that was going on, you know, in the room next door to where I was, kills
exactly.
You.
But
you know, you make those choices, and I think I said to someone,
they all got taken to a concert too. Oh. All got walked to a concert, with a whole bunch of Star Troopers.
You know, I said to someone, Comic-Con teaches you to be happy with the choices you make, not the choices you don't make.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I could have been in there. I could have committed and I could have been in that Star Wars panel, but then there would have been seven other things I didn't see that I'm really, really thrilled that I did see. So that you have to live – for anyone who hasn't been to Comic-Con, going in you need to know that you could spend the whole time just weeping over the things that you can't go to. And they're impossible nerd decisions of, you know, choosing between things. Like, do you go to the Supernatural panel or do you go to the Hannibal autograph session? I mean, you know, depending on what you love, that's a hard call to make.
Yeah, yeah.
depending on the fact that Hannibal's just been cancelled, you know, what do you do? So it can be crushing. But look, I got to see, just in the convention center, not even counting the offsite stuff, I got to see, I think it was just over 20 panels.
Oh, that's great.
So for me, that was my score, and I got to see the things I really wanted to see, Hannibal and Supernatural, of course, and a number of other things. So, but there were other things like, you know, gee, who wouldn't have wanted to have been in Hall H when the people from the X-Men, Avengers and everything were on stage at once, or the Star Wars reunion stuff. I mean, it's just,
Does Crowley have mother issues, or does Rowena have son issues?
Crowley doesn't have any mother issues. Fergus has mother issues.
Of course.
And the trouble is when you start delving into the backstory in that way, you've got an issue between how much is there of Fergus. So if you started scraping away at the humanity of Crowley, which is Fergus underneath there somewhere, buried, how much of that are you exposing, which leaves him how vulnerable to the situation with this Rowena? I think he knows absolutely what she was doing. I think Crowley's never been stupid. But I think the end is a huge jump that she's suddenly able to do things that she wasn't able to do before. So
is that terrifying or exciting?
Right at this point, he's dead, so he doesn't have much time.
Just in
to
that moment
out.
Before he died, was he like, it was "That's terrible," or "Oh my God, I've got a mother who can do that"? What does that mean?
I don't know if it was "I got a mother." That can
well,
do that, but
I have someone in my.
There is a part of Crowley who definitely go cool.
Yeah.
Because any display of any sort of power that way is kind of enticing.
Yes.
To him. He does enjoy it. He does appreciate a good spell. But as we say, it never goes well with witches.
I won't go through what happened in the Hall H panel. Oh, I should say, though, so the whole tea light candle tribute. So that started in Anne Kern, House of Darkly on Twitter, who amazingly organized the whole thing. Which was supported by Random Acts, who paid for the tea light candles. They were handed out in the Hall HQ. And I have to say, like, just being in the Hall HQ is a wonderful experience. You know, you have got people who've been out there overnight. You know, being a lightweight, only queued for 3.5 hours.
I saw that the Hollywood girls came and handed out sweets and did photos, and then Misha came and handed out pizza and got mobbed.
Yeah, so
they're going to be thinking about letting him do that again.
So that was on Saturday night, has become a bit of a tradition that not just for Supernatural but for other things, you know, people associated with that fandom will visit the line, and Misha, you know, last year and this year gave out pizza, and then he jogged past again. We didn't get coffee or donuts this year, but he jogged past again with a phalanx of stormtroopers and the gorgeous, I can't remember what it's called.
Dynamite? The
Gishwas
mascot.
So they jogged
Random
past.
Acts mascot.
No, it's the Gishwas mascot.
Oh, is it the Gishwas one?
Yeah, because and look, you know, the camaraderie in the line, and that's, you know, for me, the whole thing of Comic-Con, like any convention, is that it's this amazing shared experience. The people you meet, I mean, everyone will have tales of who they met in queues for something. For anyone who's been to a Supernatural convention, you know what that's like, the people you meet, the friends you make. You're all there because you love stuff, so you randomly end up in queues next to people that you don't know and can talk about Sensate or Orphan Black or Hannibal. There was a big thing, of course, in the Hannibal panel. We all had Fannibals Forever signs and wore flower crowns. And that was quite emotional because the show has been cancelled at the moment. So, and of course, so Anne and her friends were handing out the tea light candles through the Hall HQ. And of course, because I'd spoken to her about in the lead up to doing this, and of course, there's a lot of unknowns, is how is it going to read in Hall H? Like, if you turn these things on, are they going to be visible from the stage? Are they, you know, are people going to turn them on at the, you know, right time? And all, you know, how are you going to let the people on stage know what it's all about? Because it's not immediately obvious what the meaning is. And, you know, I've got all sorts of respect for her taking that risk and being committed to it and actually making it happen. And as a was, it turned into this amazing thing that has had a huge impact and been a wonderful way to promote the Always Keep Fighting campaign. And it was just it. So we turned them on just as the questions started. So the panels have a, you know, panel discussion bit, and then there's questions from the audience. And it worked out well. They did read very well because the house lights are down in the ballroom, and so with everyone holding them up. And there are only 1,200. I know a lot of media reports have said everyone had them. There were, I think, 1,000 or 1,200 of them. So they weren't, you know, it wasn't everyone, but they were scattered throughout the hall, and they read, you know, you could read, you could see them, and you could see the people on stage noticing them.
Going, what's going on?
And then luckily someone managed, Anne managed to get to someone who was up the front who got a thing up to, which is my segue back to the fact that Richard Speight and Rob Benedict were, I don't even want to say moderating because they didn't, they were stimulating the panel.
Yeah.
And get something up to Jared to explain what it was all about. And it was actually, you could see, like, and I'm sure there are photos, but it really, he was really incredibly.
He was really flawed.
He was really flawed. And he actually took him, you could see that there was.
It actually pulled him it took him a while to recover from it.
Yeah, yeah.
When you watched the panel.
He was really sort of off in thought and everything. And,
yeah.
And it was wonderful. It's a great, amazing thing to be part of. It's and you'll know if you've watched the panel. It was hilarious. Like as soon as we knew Rob and Rich were there, the whole hamster thing. They did actually ask some good questions about season 11, but of course it was just fucking hilarious. The hamster was just, and you could tell that. I mean, they wouldn't have known how that was going to play, but they are such great comedians that when they saw that both the panel and the audience were getting off on it, it just snowballed and got bigger and wilder and more absurd. And it was just like I was seriously in danger of peeing my pants. Like there were little bits of wee coming out, I have to tell you, because it really was just – and that made it feel a lot more – it's a lot more like a con. It felt very
familiar,
family, if you like. But then just swing from the high of that to then having the tea lights and the Always Keep Fighting stuff happening was just, it really was an emotional roller coaster. Then we had Jeremy get asked the Charlie question, which he grappled with how to answer and got totally left out to dry by all his colleagues who were just like, oh, you're on your own there, Jeremy.
No, we're having a lot of fun doing that too. I think that's actually been translated strangely a couple of times. Look how they've been mean to, you know, not I know, it was like so, it was I mean, those guys tease fucking everybody, and you know, and that's what that's how that read to me.
Andrew Dabb made a comment about something about, there's no spoilers about Castiel because he's not a fan favourite or something like that. It's like, please, people, have a sense of humour.
That was funny, yeah. But I thought it was, I mean, I read it as really quite funny, the whole thing, you know. So it was interesting to read. A lot of people took it in a very different way. But I was like, oh, those boys are just so naughty.
Oh,
get the four of them together, and then
Jensen stepped up and sort of helped him out a bit. But look, it was it was an incredible panel, and I have to say, look, panels at Comic-Con can vary. We've got to remember that our guys do a lot of fan stuff and conventions and that, so they're really comfortable in it.
Yeah.
A lot of people from other TV shows have never done it. So they sit up there like deers in the headlights, if you like.
Yeah.
It depends on who your moderator is and a whole lot of things. And so some of them are almost like press conferences. Others of them are a big party.
What was the video like that they showed? Because I know that, I think it was Jensen said it, was it at Nerd HQ, that they're hoping that they include it on the DVD?
Yeah, so of course, because they've only just started, like Jensen's, they've only been filming the episode Jensen's directed, which is episode 3 for 4 days. So they had no, normally they'll have a scene footage or something from that what they've filmed. So they didn't have any of that.
And of course, normally they have the goof reel, but they released that on iTunes like 2 weeks ago.
Yes, it's all very strange.
They
played, and what they did play that at the end, but it was an edited down version of it. It wasn't the whole gag reel. So what they played was something that had been put together for the 200th party in Vancouver, 200th episode party. Had been put together by the Supernatural editors. And it included shots from every one of the 200 episodes. And it was done as a triptych, so there were three frames across the screen at all times.
It started
with all the title cards, and then it kept going through, and that was I want to say Nickelback, but that feels wrong. Nickelback's a band everyone hates, isn't it?
Yes. Nickelback is the band everybody hates.
Anyway, whatever the song was, it was fine. I can't. It was a rock song. I've got Nickelback in my head for some reason. But anyway, and it went through all. There was a scene in there from all 200 episodes, and I believe that the editors had been collecting those over the years.
Oh.
So they had actually been putting aside, you know, clips over the years.
Wow.
With this. So it wasn't that they sat down before the 200 and had to go through 200 episodes.
Oh,
I'm sure
God.
They changed some of them, but it was amazing. And I hope they do release it, because it was both an incredible piece of editing and a wonderful, tribute to 200 episodes of Supernatural. So we just got that. That's what we got this year, was that and the gag reel, which nearly everyone had seen at that point. But we didn't really need anything else, because we'd had a hamster hosting the panel, so
they need to release that hamster as like merchandise that we can buy, the Supernatural hamster, and it needs to be wearing the appropriate jewelry.
Yes, definitely. As Olivette was the character's name.
Yes,
of course,
Olivette.
It wasn't the character hosting the panel; it was the actor hamster who
the
played
actor
the
hamster.
But look, it was just wonderful. And like anything, I mean, for me, it's that, again, it's that shared experience of being there with, 8,000 Supernatural fans, and just the high everyone was on when that finished. So it was well worth queuing for. And you can watch the panel online. So, if you weren't there, you can obviously see all of it. Then the next thing I did get into, I was part of the Supernatural press room. So people will know that aside from the panel, then there is a separate press event where you get a chance to ask everyone who was on the panel more questions. Now, this is the first time I've done this sort of thing. And it was done at the Hilton Bayfront, which is next door to the convention centre. So you finish the panel and then you run over the kilometre. Can I tell everyone, I walked over 70 kilometres in 4 days.
I saw you tweeting that.
70 kilometres, people.
That's amazing.
It's like 45 miles.
That is amazing.
It's
wow.
The best.
Did you feel like it?
Geek workout ever. I slept pretty well every night. When I finally got to bed, I tell you, if you really wanted to make the most of your Comic-Con time, you would start training now, because I don't know. Well, obviously, I'm sure there are some people going who have access to good quality drugs, because there are people there who are running events and doing stuff from dawn till dusk every day, and there are parties every night. You could hit it hard. 24/7 for 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, I'm sure people do.
Whereas I would get to a point where it's like, well, if I want to go to that panel at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, which I'm going to have to queue for at 8 o'clock, I need to go to bed now. Oh, my God, it's 2 o'clock. So There's a lot of time management needed. But anyway, so I got to the press event, and it's like you will have seen the video. So it's people sitting in a hotel ballroom. There are round sort of dining tables. I think there are about 7 or 8 of them, each one with 6 or 7 journalists, bloggers on there who have been accepted into the press room. And the talent, that was me doing air quotes, you can't see that. basically go around like speed dating. So each of them are at a table and you have 4 minutes. So you've got 4 minutes. You know, here's Jeremy Carver. You have 4 minutes. There's 6 or 7 of you, so you're sharing this.
Yeah,
and you've got 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Yeah.
You've got 4 minutes to ask him whatever you want to ask him. So that's a lot of pressure. And I have to say I came away with huge respect for everyone who does all the coverage of Comic-Con because, you know, I know from, you know, generally not being there, you know, you're getting all the reports on the panels and the what's coming up in the TV show or the movie or anything. And these people are doing all this and writing it all up in you know, generally coherent sentences to post. And it's like, I don't know how you do it. It's very hard work, very hard work. So I have a added respect for those people. And then, yeah, you have someone sit down and, you know, Jensen sits down. You've got 4 minutes to ask him about season 11.
I think there is a bit of a, you know, a control-alt-delete when it comes to what's happening. And I'm excited about that because the brothers are not fighting for each other. They're not, you know, Dean's not afflicted with the mark of Cain. Sam's not afflicted with demon blood. That, you know, they're usually, you know, for the last several years, it's been kind of this trying to save one another. They're fine. They're back in the car. They're motoring down the highway, and they have a common goal. And so, sure, everything that's happened in the past is going to play into that. They're still going to bicker like brothers, but at least they're not sacrificing, you know, values or themselves for the purpose of the other one. They're doing this together and they're fighting a common goal.
And then on the side of that ballroom is the part where they have the people with the video where the guys all walk along and do sort of 30-second individual interviews with people from usually television or web broadcast stuff as well. So they're, you know, the guys are working really hard as well because they've had autograph session in the morning, then they've got the panel, then they've got the press room, and then they had Nerd HQ. So
yeah, it's a big day.
It's a huge...
And then they've got to get back on a plane and fly back to Vancouver to start shooting on Monday.
And so then next up, and Amy is, you'll have heard throughout this podcast, we've included some of the audio from my press room at I've gone blank. Comic-Con.
Jet lag setting in.
I'll go through some of the main spoilers. So if you are being spoiler-free, go away now. I'm sure you've heard most of these. So, I mean, the big question was about the darkness. And I think the exciting thing about it is that this is something that's off the books, if you like. So Supernatural's always followed, whether it's urban legends or folklore or religion, and particularly, obviously, a lot of biblical lore, has had a basis for what it's put in the show, even if they've, you know, always have put their own spin on it. But, of course, the darkness is outside of that. So it's obvious that opens up. It can be anything that they want it to be. And the fact that it predates everyone and everything who's currently in the show is exciting too. So I think, the point was made that, angels and demons don't know about the darkness either. Like they don't know, the Winchesters have got nowhere to turn that they can immediately see to find out anything. So no one knows what it is.
Which is exciting.
Yeah, so no one knows what is it. What does it want? Like, okay, it's called the darkness, but you know what specifically?
What's this 90s cock rock?
Yeah, or Tim Curry in The Legend. So, you know, what does it want, or what is it going to do? And, of course, how to stop it. So I think that's interesting because, you know, the angels aren't going to know, the demons don't know. So, you know, heaven and hell and earth are all sort of in the same basket with this, and the point that it will bring up sort of strange alliances as well was made. And obviously some beings might be thinking, oh, well, maybe we're on the darkness's side. I think one of the lines that kept coming up again and again was that this season Sam and Dean are very much on the same page. So the fact that they've got a common quest there, I think Jared said it, and Jensen both said it, you know, neither of them are affected by demons' blood or not having a soul,
yeah,
or having a mark of Cain. There's no extraneous...
I think that there's only ever been fleeting moments in a season here and there where that's the case.
Yeah, so there's nothing like that is an extraneous thing affecting the relationship. So that they're very much on, they've got a common quest, and they're on the same page about trying to deal with it. The point was made that, and again, it's really hard in when you think that everything you hear comes in these little 4-minute interviews you get. So I think some of the subtlety can be lost. And of course, they're very, you know, at the end of the day, all we found out was the boys are going to be fighting a thing.
Yeah. And no one knew a lot about it because Jensen had said he'd only read maybe 4 or 5 of the treatments, and yeah, so he didn't really know a lot.
The writers are halfway through the season now, so writing the season. So they know what
they
it is.
Know.
It's being very close-mouthed as far as spoilers go, which I appreciate. So they were being very careful about not letting out any of the details. We did find out on my panel, though, that the darkness will have a human manifestation, which hadn't come out much. So that will be interesting. But that was that. I think it was Andrew Dabb who said that. But that's sort of as much as we knew about that. And I think it might have been Jensen later on who said, you know, the boys might be on the same road, in the car, driving the car down the road together, but it doesn't mean there aren't going to be bumps. So, yeah, of course, there is going to be some conflict between them.
Well, there's always bumps.
Well, and they're both in different emotional spaces as well. It was very clear that that Dean won't be tied up with guilt over whatever you could see his role was in releasing the darkness. But both Sam and Dean are going to be dealing with the fact that you can't and other characters as well, that you can't outrun your past. So I think that's going to be a bit of a recurring theme for many characters, and that's about consequences, not necessarily about hand-wringing guilt over something, but the decisions you make have consequences. And again, there's subtleties there that I don't think we'll quite understand until we see how it plays out. But there was, you know, a number of them said, you know, no, Dean and Sam aren't going to be tied up with feeling guilty about things. They're going to be working out how to deal with it. But this idea that your decisions have consequences will come into play as well.
And it's interesting to hear that we pick up exactly where we left off, we pick up where we left off, but they, one of the interviews I listened to said that how long the guys have been out is not obvious straight away, but basically we pick up the same scene.
There's not going to be,
but we don't know, you know, whether they were out cold for half an hour or 4 hours or whatever.
Yes, there's no significant time jump between the seasons. I'm trying to think what else. So I'll just go through the characters that might help me remember. There was, so with Dean, yes, he's not going to be tied up with a lot of guilt. There may be, and look, I'm paraphrasing all this, so, you know, please don't go harassing people on Twitter saying Jules said, because this is, I'm paraphrasing here, but there may be some connection. The fact that Dean had the mark and that mark was a key to the lock that had the darkness trapped, there may be, or that will be a question of, is there a connection or is there something there between Dean and the darkness? So that certainly came up as well. Sam, in his efforts to find out how to stop the darkness, will start having some form of, it wasn't clear if it was dreams or visions, about a higher power. And it sounds like to me that's going to play back into the older themes around Sam and faith, possibly,
yeah.
That we saw in older episodes. Cass, okay, so obviously, despite Mark Shepherd's protestations, Cass and Crowley are both still alive.
Yeah. Despite the fact that Mark just constantly kept saying he was just dead, even though everybody else was talking about him being alive.
Yes. So we know that Cass will be joining with the boys to try and fight the darkness. But we also know that the spell that Rowena – we also know. It was also intimated that the spell Rowena put on Cass will have some sort of lasting effects. Rowena, again, not – a lot of these things aren't specific. They were more general sort of statements that she's obviously incredibly powerful and possibly one of the most powerful things on Earth at the moment. The issue of death's death came up. Mm. Again, a lot of the people, particularly Andrew Dabb and Jeremy Carver, would answer questions with questions, which... so the question of, what happens when, because death isn't around, and yes, the ripple effect of that won't be immediately obvious, but will be played out. So what happens when death's taken out of the picture, and also whether someone or thing replaces the death we know in that role.
Yes, because I think it was in one of Andrew's interviews he said, well, there has to be a death, doesn't there? So
yes.
who steps into death's role?
Yes. So that was sort of, I think that was there. They were the main sort of tenor of things. There were some more specific things. The big news that I was so excited about, and I know you are, Amy, is Richard Speight's directing.
Yes, very excited about that. And that's so funny because I've asked him to his face, are you directing in that? Are you going to be directing in season 11? I'm pretty sure I asked him that in my Skype. And he said, no. He said, like, and then it comes out, I'm like, he's a liar, pants on fire. Until I see that man. So that's very exciting.
It is. I know that, Richard's obviously directed some smaller things, and we know that last year he shadowed Bob Singer during an episode, which had led to a lot of speculation that the trickster was back, but that he was actually shadowing Bob Singer when he was directing an episode. So yeah. I think that's hugely exciting.
So exciting. One other thing that I think that came out was really exciting was episode 4, which is being written by Robbie Thompson and will be taking place entirely in the Impala.
Yes, the episode known as Baby.
Yep.
Will be Impala centric.
Yeah, Impala
centric. Again, there wasn't a lot said about it, but it will be centered around the Impala. So.
Yeah. Jensen talked a little bit about the movie Lock, which I don't know if
yes,
I know you've seen it, Jules, but it's wonderful if you haven't seen it. It's a wonderful movie with Tom Hardy that just takes place in his car, and it's just him on the phone to various people, and it's one of the most tense, stressful movies, and you would never think that, 90 minutes inside a car would be like that, but it's a really full-on tense experience. Mm. And he spoke about that, and he also spoke about the Ryan Reynolds movie Buried, where he's buried underground and you're basically just in a small box with Ryan Reynolds for 90 minutes. So it sounds like it might be something along those lines, and I know Andrew Dabb talked a little bit about it as well, and they all sound very excited about the this particular episode. And also I can't remember who was talking about it, and they're a little bit they're a little bit of trepidation of how they're actually going to achieve it.
It was all quite vague and general, and I don't know that I quite grasp exactly what it's going to look like, but
no.
I'm excited.
Very excited. Very excited.
Another episode, there is going to be an episode that stretches. They didn't even say it was going to be really a two-parter, but there will be an episode that stretches over a couple in the same place. So rather than, you know, each episode's usually in a different town or whatever, there will be an episode that takes place in the same location. So there's also going to be one that involves the fact that as a child Sam had an imaginary friend.
Oh, yes, and that imaginary friends are a real thing.
Yes.
That sounds great. I really like the sound of that one too.
I quite like the idea of that. Jeremy also said when he was at our table, he was asked about the idea that when he came on board, he had a 3-year plan in his head. And he sort of intimated, well, didn't intimate, he said that they were still on that 3-year plan, even though it's year 4. So... So that, as you would expect, there are some things that hadn't, you know, some things that had become bigger that, you know, they've taken more time on, and some things that they thought, you know, in the broader story might have come earlier that they're working on this season. And you know that when they start talking about the fact that it was on one of the panels that they said, you know, characters like Rowena, she was going to be a 3 or 4 episode character who... because they love what Ruth Connell, excuse me, did with the role, ended up being extended.
And just so I was just going to say, just on the panels, just in case if anybody wants to watch the press room videos and press line videos, I did a really big mega post on Sweet on Dean blog, sweetondean.com, blogspot.com, and that's got, I'm pretty sure I've covered every single, I think I've got every table done there, so there's a lot of them, of all the cast and Andrew and Jeremy as well, so you can go there and watch all the videos, and there's a lot of press line interview stuff as well there.
And you'll see, because, you know, these people are being asked the same questions, and I know as fans we want to parse everything down to its meaning, but you've got to remember these guys are doing this on the run. They're trying to remember what they're meant to say and not say.
Yeah.
They're making general statements often, and you'll be thinking, oh, he said that, and then he said it slightly differently here. So it's that time of year when we're so desperate, I think, for any news, and you know, they're not giving a lot away, which I really appreciate. I want some teasers, but I don't want any spoilers. But yes, do go through and watch them all. It's really interesting to see, and that will be really all the spoilers we get until the episode, you know, sort of synopsis start coming out. But really, until we start, the season starts in October.
Ooh, I know, which doesn't seem that far away now. Yeah, it is still a long way away. Well, you've got VanCon coming up, and I've got DallasCon coming up. So.
I know, but it's not the show.
I know. It is a long way away. It doesn't seem as far as it was. It is getting closer.
It is. But it's you know, Comic-Con's always the first tease of the fact that, you know, season 11 is about to start. And I have to say, I was just so excited. I mean, I just, all the little hints we heard, which were, as I said, really not spoilery.
Everyone
seems really excited.
Everybody seems very excited, very positive. And, you know, like for a show going into its 11th season, to see the people making the show, and particularly the two leads who have been on it since day one, it sound even more excited now than, you know, they did a few years ago is really an amazing thing.
Do you think a large part of that with the characters in season 11 is because of that great speech Sam has about to Dean about, you know, I will never not think you're a good man, which... just seem to be such a kernel of truth between them.
Yeah, I think so, yes. I think that entire scene, that entire sacrifice that Dean made, the speech that Sam made, which was just very brutally honest, that was his death speech.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
Let me say it and then do what you got to do. It was very powerful. And I watched it in England. I watched it, we had editor ADR when I was in London, and I hadn't seen the scene. And so I asked the guy, I asked the sound editor if I could watch it. I was like, hey, do you mind rewinding it to the beginning and just letting it play? He was like, sure. So we watched it, and I was getting teary. And then it ended, and I could hear from the sound booth, fuck. And I was like, thanks, man. He goes, that's a hell of a scene. I was like, thanks, brother. And then we went back and ADR'd. But it was really powerful. It was really powerful. And especially with everything I've gone through in my life, personally, it just resonated, you know? And I think that's part of supernatural. Like, it's about angels and demons and the king of hell and God, ghouls and zombies. I mean, like, it's about these outlandish things, but the kernels of truth, of humanity and of sacrifice and of loyalty and of love, they resonate no matter the medium with which you paint them, you know? So it's a fun show to be able to tell all these stories, you know, because we're able to tell stories that CSI couldn't tell, yeah. NCIS couldn't tell, you know?
I found that a real theme of this weekend with the genre shows.
Both
the big philosophical issues and the personal issues
that are
able to be explored that you don't get in.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we can make something tangible, like this darkness that feels overwhelming is overwhelming. We're making it into a tangible person, but it's this, human beings have these obstacles that seem overwhelming and that seem insurmountable. And we're just a crazy show that can tell it in a fun, kooky way.
The last part of Supernatural Sunday was Nerd HQ, which, as everyone, most people would know. So these are panels that Zach Levy puts on within the Nerd HQ complex, which has a whole lot of gaming stuff and that in there. And then he does these panels where he gets, I'll say friends, but people who are appearing at Comic-Con to do these panels. The entry to them is only like $22, and all that money goes to they're called Conversations for a Cause, and the money goes to Operation Smile, which is about repairing cleft palates in for kids around the world. So really, really good cause. The tickets...
Seriously,
you... No. 3 seconds? Ha! 3 nanoseconds! So there's only 200 seats in this room, so it's very small and intimate. And, yes, the tickets sell out. Like, I tried to get tickets to every Nerd HQ panel and failed miserably. Like, I didn't even get through as far as getting them into my cart on the website, let alone some people got that far. But by the time they pushed the take my money button, they sold out. However, my lovely partner in cocktail parties, Heidi, managed to not only get 2 tickets to Nerd HQ, she managed to get 2 front row tickets. to Nerd HQ.
How did she do that?
I don't know. Like, she talk about superpower.
A superpower.
So I then had, as the boys did, to go from one end of the whole strip where the convention is. You have the Hilton at one end where there's some events and all the press stuff is. And then this year Nerd HQ was right at the other end in the Children's Museum. So I had like no time at all to go a long way just to add to the sort of high drama and excitement of the day. And so it's in this tiny room. Aisha Tyler, again, I won't say moderated because like Robin Rich, no. It's more about promoting chaos. And she was wonderful and apparently had spent most of the previous night dancing and drinking
and
with Jared.
And being hugged.
And she's wonderful and knows the guys well. And then it was Jared Jensen and Mark. Now, Misha had gone back to LA. I actually missed out on him at the press room, which, of course, as these things do, had run over. And he was due to come to our table, but everyone else had finished. And he had decided to go back to LA to see the family before he went back to Vancouver. and so he wasn't at the Nerd HQ panel. Which left poor Mark in the firing line of Jared. It was quite amazing. People may not realise, but I've never done a meet and greet. I've only ever had a couple of photos with the guys, and I've only ever been to 3 cons. So to be both at the press room and sit next to them, and also to be at the Nerd HQ panel, and literally if Jensen and I had have just straightened our legs out in front of us, we would have been playing footsie. That's how close we were. It was wonderful. If you've watched the video, you'll, you know, again, and the wonderful thing Zach does is live stream all the videos and you can go back and watch them. They're excellent quality. They're really wonderful quality, and you really do capture, you know, what it's like to be there. So
yeah, I watched it live stream. I was late for work that day. and I plug it through my TV so I get to watch it and, you know, big. And then I watched it again when I got home. But it's good to watch it live because, you know, it's actually happening at that moment, and you know,
a great atmosphere. You'll be pleased to know, so my friend Simone, who was up the back because she was there in press as a photographer, but she did the foresight, as Australian fans will know, Jared loves fantails, which are a type of candy we have, and
rip
so
your
she
teeth out.
Yes, so she gave a bag of fantails for me to give to Jared, which I did, which caused lots of distraction during the panel, as
yes.
Aisha discovered that she loved them as well.
How can you not love a fantail?
So I won't, I mean, I don't need to recap the panel because I don't even know if I could, except, oh my God, that unicorn thing, which I think NerdHQ mentioned as one of their funniest moments of the whole of Comic-Con, which it certainly was.
And it got real dirty real quick.
I did
Jensen think... just kept pushing it. Let's that little bit further.
That's what he
said. Yeah, no.
No, it was... Gotta relax. Something like that.
I was just like, oh my God, Jared's face when he said that. He couldn't believe it.
That was one wonderful.
I started to sweat.
One of the wonderful things about being in the front row was that you obviously could hear all the things they were saying that were off mic as well, and the looks and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, look, it almost feels like almost that we can take it for granted, but you do, and not to say that, you know, I went to so many amazing panels and you do see lots of people who, you know, are working hard on their show, who obviously have great rapport with their cast members and relationships with the fandom. I could talk about, you know, Brian Fuller and his love for the Fannibals forever. he actually went into the crowd to grab flower crowns. And anyway, I won't go on about that now. But there is, you know, to be part of Supernatural fandom, and as I said, it's almost like you can take this for granted. But, oh, my God, these guys, I mean, they have so much fun with each other. They have so much fun with us. You know, aside from how awesome the show is, just this relationship that they have off screen, which reflects on screen. You know, you and I have both spoken before about the, you know, the fact of how many of the actors who've been on the show who through conventions have developed not only friendships but creative relationships like Rob and Rich. It is quite extraordinary, you know, the fact that we can have a fan event like the cocktail party and have actors and writers turning up because they want to hang out with the fans, you know. That was not a press thing. That was not a media thing. No one was paid. That was, you know, if you want to drop in and have a drink with us. There was a very widespread photo from the autograph signing they did at the WB booth of a young woman who sort of burst into tears as she was getting Jensen's autograph. And
Jensen even posted that on his Facebook saying it was his favourite moment of the weekend.
And you know, as said with the main panel, and you know, you're swinging from having a hamster interviewing the cast members on stage in what I can only say was just, you know, this amazing comedy routine. And then you've got the tea light candles organised by a fan and being so wonderful, highlighting things like, you know, people dealing with mental health and the fandom and the crew, cast and crew working together on this, that it can go from the hilarious, you know, to the moving, and, you know, all of them and particularly Jared and Jensen and Misha and Mark, you know, spoke about how transformative this experience has been for them in hearing our stories about how transformative being in the fandom has been for us. And I think it's that loop of and that connection that, you know, is just so incredibly special. And, you know, yes, they're wonderfully attractive guys and they're really nice and everything, but you know, it's all that is so much, you know, it's become so much greater than the sum of its parts that, you know, this is something that's going to persist for very many years, and the effect that, you know, it's had on all of us is huge. And, you know, certainly for me to be able to go to Comic-Con in, you know, 2015, to stay in an apartment with a group of people, only one of whom I knew, and have this, you know, incredible fan experience, to go to panels and you know, meet people in line and share experiences with fans that I've total strangers is just wonderful. The creativity, going to all the Geek and Sundry stuff, which is, you know, so innovative and so accessible, and the communities that, you know, Felicia and Will and all that have formed through Geek and Sundry was just, you know, it really made you realize, in amongst all the, you know, big movie marketing and the merchandising and all that, above and beyond all that is just so much connection and creativity and wonderfulness that just makes you love being a fan and a geek. So lots and lots of love. and hopefully not too much con crud.
Yeah, I was going to say. I
think this is just a result of just having got off a plane for 15 hours. But, yeah, no, it was an incredible experience for me. We've already plans are afoot for next year. It's, you know, I would recommend if you're a fan, Comic-Con is definitely an experience, you know, worth having. On the other hand, it's also not going to be for everyone. It is about crowds. It is full on. You do have to make terrible decisions all weekend of, do I see, you know, this favourite wonderful thing or this other favourite wonderful thing? It's while it is accessible, as I said, you know, I walked over 70 kilometres, so it's a bit of an endurance event. But, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world. It was absolutely wonderful, and there's so much wonderful stuff out there. I was lucky enough, you know, I went to a lot of the smaller panels. I went to one about use of comics in therapy and the portrayal of mental illness in comics. I went to I got to see, now, and we'll be posting more about this. I don't know that everyone knows Ali Brosh, who does the Hyperbole and a Half web comic thing. No, do you know her?
No, I don't.
Oh, so Ali Brosh, anyway, I won't rave on about her now, but she was amazing, and I got to see her in conversation with Felicia Day. The connection with Supernatural is that she's written a lot about her own depression, and she's also she sort of writes short stories that are illustrated with pictures. They're not quite comics, and they're hilarious. Like, these really are. I have actually wet myself reading these things. I will hook you up, Amy. I know you'll love. She also does a lot about her dogs and stuff, and brilliant. And to be able to see her, she rarely does conventions or anything. That was amazing. I got to meet the, you know, one of my comics heroes, Gail Simone. I got to go to a thing about which had a whole lot of people who'd been in, either as an actor or a writer, some of the classic horror movies, you know, like Friday the 13th franchise or Nightmare on Elm Street, and talking about being gay in the horror industry. And there was just so much, like, really at every turn. There's just something amazing, and the only regret is that, you know, unlike Tatiana Maslany, you can't clone yourself and get everything.
Shame.
And got to see some pilots for new TV shows, which is always exciting because it's like,
what did you see?
Just briefly, I only saw a few. Minority Report,
right?
Which is sort of vaguely a sequel. That follows on from the movie,
right?
Minority Report, which was based on the I think it's a Philip K. Dick story, short story, and then Colony, which is by Carlton Coos from Lost, which is about an invasion of LA and around themes of collaboration and resistance when you're in a city that's been invaded, and how do you decide, you know, if you need to do what, if you're going to do what you need to do to survive, how do you make those sort of ethical decisions about what you might end up doing, which in a theoretical, you'll never collaborate with the invaders, but, you know, if your family's life is at stake, would you? Those sort of things. So a big serialized show. I think they were the two big pilots I saw, and obviously lots of teasers for coming seasons for other shows. Mm-hmm. So it was very, very wonderful.
Even in your time as a director, have you seen shifts in things, technology that then affect your what you can then do as a director?
Absolutely. We even this year we've got a new camera. We still have the three that we've been filming on for a number of years now. But we have the Arri Mini, the Alexa Mini.
Yeah, I think Jose posted a photo of it.
Oh, really? Yeah. So we have the Alexa Mini. So that's not really going to change anything as far as like film quality or anything like that. It's just it's going to make camera operating a little easier. It's 10 pounds lighter. So when you're doing a lot of these action sequences and the camera operators are holding a, you know, I think those things are like 40 pounds or something. Yeah. On their shoulder, well, 10 pounds is a lot, especially if you're holding that thing on your shoulder for 12 hours. So I think just what we're going to be able to do with it is going to be nice and be a little bit more mobile.
And you had that drone footage in the finale, which was amazing.
That was incredible. One of the big things that I'm using in my episode that might actually be something that we're going to start using a little bit that we didn't in the past because it was so tedious is green screen.
Oh, wow.
So we haven't done green screen. Nonsense. We haven't done green screen in many years. We've done it a couple times for speciality things, but we're using it actually for the Impala. Mm-hmm. Because if you notice, most of our Impala scenes are shot at night. And the outside, you see the lights going by and the highway lights and stuff, that's all simulated. Yeah. Practically simulated. So we've actually got guys with flashlights running down, you know, and we created a big thing that actually doesn't require guys to run with flashlights anymore. It's like this big rotating wheel that kind of comes around. And there's been other shows that have come to our set and taken pictures of our setup because they want to.
Wow.
But that made us always have those Impala scenes at night on the highway because that was the look that we could create. Well, this specific look that I have to create for this episode is not a highway at night. It's like dusk in towns.
Wow.
And instead of live driving, which was one option that I was thinking of, is like stick the cameras in the back seat and have us actually drive around. I'm driving. I'm pretty good at it by now. But that was still going to be too much time consuming. So we're actually doing, I think they're rigging up a 360 GoPro thing and sticking it in the car and then actually going to drive around and get plates. And then we're going to superimpose that on the green screen. But there's a couple of shots that his effects team were like, we wouldn't have been able to do this 5 years ago.
It's fantastic.
So we're implementing new technology into this episode that might start being used more throughout the season.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Guys, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Everyone should check out Amy's big mega post on the coverage of all the Supernatural stuff at Comic-Con. I know there are lots more photos being posted. Simone, who I was staying with, has been editing and posting photos on Twitter.
Yes, most enjoyable.
Her Twitter handle is RedTekal, so RedTekal, but she will also link to her Flickr account once she uploads them all there, and she's got some amazing photos.
As she always does.
Both her Hall H Supernatural panel, but especially her Nerd HQ panels, photos are just amazing. I kept referring to her as my memory bank for the week. I can't take photos to save my life. I do podcasts instead to remember things. So, thank you all for listening. I'm sure I've been rambling slightly incomprehensibly, but it's sort of a hard thing to contain because there's so much going on. And Ruth Cannell was there on – O'Connell was there on Saturday night, I think, for the party, and I think Osric was there on Saturday as well. I was just suddenly remembering people who had –
yeah. I think Osric joined Misha with the pizza thing.
Oh, okay.
And Ruth was the person who was on set when Jensen asked.
That was a hilarious moment in the panel because I was caught the same way the boys on stage were. So they'd asked whether anyone had been watching them film in Vancouver that week, and this voice sort of went, oh, yes, I was there. And they were just sort of course, remember, the guys are on stage with huge lights on them. They can't see the audience at all. Like, it's literally just pitch black out there. They can hear voices, and then when people come up to ask the questions, there's a spotlight on the microphone, but the rest of it's just dark. And it was only later that they said something and realised it was actually Ruth who had said she was on set.
I thought that was hilarious because Jensen had gone, oh, really? You were there? Oh, that's great. And then kind of moved on. He's like, wait, it was you? Oh, it was you.
Look, I think everyone, all fandom should be really excited about season 11. Although we don't know a lot of the particulars, I just think, oh, look, who am I kidding? It's going to be fantastic.
Of course it is.
Fandom's going to wank about it.
Of course they are.
And I'll just be, you know, it will be a thrill to see how this tale of the darkness unfolds. And also just to end on the note that, of course, Supernatural now is the longest running science fiction show ever in America. So, and I think it is probably next to Doctor Who, the longest running one in the world. And probably if you, you know, that's pretty incredible to have reached.
Incredible.
And not showing any signs of slowing down at the moment. So,
because I'm not ready.
So we'll be back. We'll get our shit together and get back with, I'm sure, some rewatches and that for Women of Letters. Of course, I've got VanCon coming up, and then Amy's got Dallas Con, so there'll be some con reports coming up to the opening of season 11. I'm sure we'll do a more coherent spoiler roundup at some point coming
up
soon.
Once they start coming out more, I think.
Definitely do a season 10 recap, I think.
I actually started last night and I got quite a long way because I couldn't believe how into it I was. Well, I can believe how into it I was, but it was like watching it with fresh eyes. I actually started watching, just from some stuff that Jensen had said over the Comic-Con weekend, I started watching from Firstborn last night, and I thought I'm going to watch from first. So the Mark of Cain arc from Firstborn through to the end of season 10, and it's been really interesting because I'm seeing it with totally different eyes from having experienced season 10 and seeing where the boys have gone and who Sam became. A lot of the conversations that were so desperately heartbreaking sort of have this whole other level to them now, and it's really interesting going back and watching
I always think Supernatural is a show that does pay off rewatching after the season is finished, because you don't have that desperate week to week, oh my God, what's happening now? And you can see, I suppose, more of the broader storylines and the development of character stuff that often you're so close to it week to week that
you can't see it
or you're so desperate for the next bit that you forget all the things that have built up to something.
Or you just interpret it differently because you're interpreting it in that moment of heartbreak and everything. But when you see all the pieces gluing together, you realise that how you interpreted that conversation in the first place maybe isn't how you... I was interpreting looks and things between the boys in these episodes as they were going through that, you know, that really horrible hard patch after all the mean words.
Yes.
I was interpreting it very differently to what I did at the time, you know, so it's very interesting. So, yeah, I think we should definitely do... we'll obviously do a season 10 recap and maybe we can, you know, do something like, you know, a bit broader as well. At some point, when we get a crack together.
We will. Thank you for listening, everyone. As I said, I feel I was a bit all over the place, but hopefully it gave you a bit of a taste of what it was to actually be there. So we're really lucky that, of course, everything's been videoed and is online, so, you know, you're not missing out on anything except standing in a lot of queues. But, no, it is particularly wonderful, of course, to have been there, and I can't wait till next year.
Yay, thanks, Jules. That was great. I was excited to hear all about it, and thank you for sharing your experiences, and we'll talk to everybody soon. Bye for now.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is wolspn@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.